What's the 411? You tuned in to 411 Teen. 411 Teen is a weekly program for teens and other interested folks. 411 Teen provides a forum to examine and discuss various issues and events that confront, intersect, and sometimes interrupt our daily lives. I'm Dr. Liz Hollyfield, producer of 411 Teen. Joining me here at the roundtable, I welcome Brandon Jarif. Brandon hails from Detroit. He's a theater arts major and a sophomore at FAMU.
How's everybody doing? Thank you for letting me be here.
Look forward to talking with you. Also joining me is LaRika Moultrie. She hails from Pensacola. She's been on the program before, and we're always glad to have her back. She's a psych major.
Hi, everybody. Thanks for having me.
Monique McFarland hails from Fort Lauderdale, freshman in pre-nursing.
Hey, how y'all doing?
Fantasia Jackson hails from Kentucky, freshman in business fashion.
Hello, everybody.
Well, welcome to 411 Teen. Glad to have you. Dysfunctional family members are often unable to manage their lives effectively. Conflict, misbehavior, child abuse, neglect, addiction, mental illness, disturbed relationships, chronic illness are the ingredients. Relationships are strained, tension is high, stress is prevalent. Communication between family members is distorted and problematic. Negotiating dysfunction in the family for survival, you may find yourself pretending or denying the destructive cycle that envelops the entire family. One may experience stress, trauma, and pain. The dysfunction in your family may force you into unnatural roles within the family. As a child, one is innocent, and their life is impacted dramatically by forces under which you have no control. Maybe you had a parent who was chronically ill, or suffered with mental illness, or maybe you had a brother who was a substance abuser. Today, my panel will talk about family dysfunction. What is your particular stressor that brought you to this discussion today? I'll start with you, Fantasia.
My particular stressor is probably, like, not really gang-related, but just violence. This kind of, I don't want to say a family curse because I don't want to put that on my family, but unfortunately, most of the guys in our family, this week, we lost somebody, again to, gun violence, and they were, you know, at a bowling alley and just went wrong, just to, you know, be in the wrong place at the wrong time. So it's just constant, you know, mainly just death, just constant losing people. Mm-hmm. It just happens, you know, and that's life, but it just seems like this is the biggest stressor in my life.
Because mm-hmm. I know you've talked about this before in other contexts, and you have lost a number of family members to gun violence and
yes.
discord. Okay.
I have a lot of them, but the most prevalent one is a substance abuse of some kind, of alcohol or cigarettes. Mm-hmm. And, like, recently I went home and my uncle got to the point where he forgot that he invited people over. And they were drinking the beer that he put in on, and he snatched the beer and threw it back in the cooler. And it's like, it's just, it becomes stressful because it's like we go from having a good time to having a horrible time and trying to figure out, you know, how to calm him down. And then when Granny starts crying, like, that's the heart of the family. Mm-hmm. So everybody's just like, no, you can't do that. But it's like a substance abuse.
Yeah. Okay. All right.
Hey, well, my stressor is my dad. Like, this minute he's there, next minute he's not. It's like a constant in and out. Make promises you don't fulfill. And I think most of all, it's like a trend because he didn't have, like, a father figure in his life. So he don't know how to be a father himself. But pretty much it's the dad figure of not being there and feeling a fatherly love that everyone wants.
Okay.
I'm not allowed to say that my whole family is my stressor. Like, because sometimes, you know, I just look back and I feel like Keisha Cole's family has nothing on mine. You know what I mean? Like, BET should call mm-hmm. me or something. Mm-hmm. But, most honestly, you know, neglect, drug abuse, those are, like, I guess the main two that causes conflict in my family. You know, my mom is the one that has a drug problem, and she's trying to get over it, but, you know, there's always those relapses and those late-night calls of, you know, we don't know where your mother is, you know, last time we saw her, she went out to the hood, you know. And then I feel like my dad, he was trying to... you know, save it as much as he can. Mm-hmm. But him trying to, you know, work all the time, you know, leaves us to raise ourselves. And I feel like, you know, it has its goods, but it has its bads at the same time. So.
Okay. And I think you've kind of touched on a number of different things. Let's look at how this dysfunction impacts the family overall, and then we'll look at how it impacts you. For example, LaRica. Okay, you were saying that, you know, it seems to just spread and permeate into every aspect.
Yeah.
Your grandmother gets upset. You know, you all are kind of walking on eggshells. Would you elaborate on that and just share, you know, give us a feel for exactly.
I guess every family just has their problem child. Like, my grandmother and my great-uncle are the ones that are, like, they feel that they're being attacked in a way because of their disposition in mm-hmm. the situation. Like, my grandmother, she had substance abuse problems. And so every time anybody says anything to her, she just feels like you're just talking about her substance abuse. So it's like we're all good, and then she'll just start arguing with somebody. Mm-hmm. And it's just like, what are you talking about? And then you go outside, and my uncle's out there, and he's drunk. He can barely walk, and he's just doing all. And it's like, it was bad where we used to only get together for funerals. That was the only time okay. I saw my family, like, was when somebody died. Mm-hmm. When somebody died. Actually, not my last great uncle that died, but my grandpa and my great uncle that died were both abuse of cigarettes and drinking. Mm-hmm. Like, one of my uncles felt like, okay, he was hurting from being drunk, so he drank more so that he would stop hurting from, I don't know, you know, but it was like, so now we were trying to get together more, you know, more often for fun occasions, but it mm-hmm. always just turned bad. Even when we got together and somebody died, it always turned into, okay, one person drinks more, and then we're running after him and trying to get him to, you know.
Total chaos is what I hear you saying.
Oh, my goodness. And, like, running up and down the street and fighting everybody and fighting his brothers. And my mom, it kind of bothered me because my mom was like, my grandmother's crying now, and we're here to hold him back. So what happens when we're not here and they're there together? Because he lives with my grandmother. So it's like, what happens when we're not around?
How do you all handle that? Because it sounds like everybody is involved. Everybody yeah. is impacted by it. I mean, it sounds as if when you do anything that relates to the family,
There's always something. Unfortunately, my mom and my stepdad and me and my brother, I don't really have a real relationship with, like, you know, they say your cousins are your first mm-hmm. best friend. I never really had that kind of, like, we okay. really kind of strayed away from. My mom
so
was
kind of distant?
Yeah, like, my mom's more like the the picture frame family, like, you know, we take pictures every Christmas, we eat together. If we all want to watch TV, we eat in the living room together. So mm-hmm. it's like she kind of sheltered us from it. So like now it's just like I just sit and just look like, oh God, okay, it's gonna happen again. Like mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So it's just like I don't really know how to. It makes me not want to be around. Like I actually left. I went there this weekend and Friday, my uncle died, and we were letting go balloons for in his honor or whatever. Mm-hmm. And, like, my uncle had started, like, doing all kinds of crazy stuff, and I actually left and missed the actual letting go of the balloons. And it kind of, like, hurt my feelings, but it was bothering me that he felt like he had to act that way. Like, he was, like, trying to get attention or something. Mm-hmm. I don't even know.
Okay. Yeah. All right. Mommy, share. I mean, and I know you've kind of touched on just what your father is in and out and in and out. Can you just elaborate and touch on that some more?
Okay. I'm Jamaican history, so I was living in Jamaica until he migrated when I was like 5 and so forth. So I didn't really have a fatherly figure. But then as you grow older, you want to be around your dad. And I'm only child from my mom, so I don't really have a sister or any other member as siblings by my father's side, though. But we aren't living together, so I don't have that sibling bond. And however, like he said, as you grow older, he wants to take me up and raise me in his home. So he, like, promised that things going to be better here and he's going to have your back and everything. But, you know, like, sometimes people promise you stuff and you have this high expectation, but it's not nothing that was expected. And
so you dealt with a lot of disappointment, is what you're saying? Okay.
So I came here and pretty much had to do everything on my own because he's a truck driver, so he's barely home. And I'm always home alone. My stepmom, she's a nurse, so she works on shifts and so forth. And in high school, my dad was so abusive, like verbally abusive, physically abusive. He hits me for no reason at all in front of people. He always want to embarrass you in front of everybody else. Like, he be having his females over, and if I don't do something or have the place kept, he be like, you know, I'm having people over, why you don't do stuff, such and such and all of that. And then you feel small as a big teen or young adult. You gonna feel small being insulted in front of people and so forth. And I just didn't really trust people that much, so I didn't tell nobody nothing was going on. I go to school and have anger, because I'll take out my anger on people. Because at the end of the day, it's your dad, so you won't want to say what you want to say to him, because you have to respect him. So you might take it on those who just in your path. And I'll do stuff for it, and it wouldn't take me nowhere, because I'll take out my anger. I'd have bad anger problems. I'll take it out on people regarding to whatever my dad do to me. And going to school, like, I'd have to focus on my work, and then sometimes I don't even want to come home because I know, oh, my God, it's going to be arguments and beating and all of that. And I used to be so embarrassed because, you know, at a 16, I was 16 at the time. A 16-year-old still getting beaten, like, it's not good. And then he'd be, like, arguing over stupidness, like, some irrelevant things. He has a bad temper himself, so he couldn't get along with no family member at all. And my mom used to be stressing because she's back home. She'd be wondering if her daughter is okay and all of that. And sometimes he'll punish me not putting food in the table, in the house, or taking away my TV, my phone, just childish things. And then in 12th grade now, like, there comes the stress. You got to be searching for colleges and so forth, and then dealing with schoolwork and dealing with your father at home. And I didn't have much information or much support for finding schools, so I just applied to any school in my path. And my dad, he wasn't there to guide me in the path, like, that's such a good school and you should go to that school or so forth. I remember one night something went missing and he was like, I took it because we had an argument, so you think I took it because I'm trying to get back at him. Up to today, I don't know what lost. I don't have no clue of what it was. But that man beat me. He dragged me off the bed. He hit me. He dragged me outside the door, pack up my stuff, say he's going to bring me by his sister and stuff for, like, I said, I don't know what you're talking about. I know you took it. I said, you didn't see me take it up, so you can't say I took it up or so. He's like, he know I took it. I was using this code. I was like, if you go to court, you would lose because the judge would ask you, did you see? And you'd be like, no. So you can say you know I took it when I didn't take it. And now I'm in college, like, he don't have nothing to do with me. He kicked me out on my 18th birthday, so I had to stay with this lady because I didn't want, the police to get all involved or so forth. So I just stayed with this lady. I couldn't let him know who I stayed with because he was a close lady of the family. But he was like, she don't want to get involved, so she just keep me local while I stay with her. And I didn't have a plan B, so I stayed until I came to college, and now I pay for out of pocket. You know, Jamaican money is very weak, and my mom pays for my school because I don't have financial aid. I don't have no scholarships, no student loans, or so forth. So everything is on my mom, and I know they'll take.
Well, I know it's difficult for you to talk about it, and I appreciate you sharing, because it sounds like you have a really chaotic and difficult time. So we really applaud you, because you have done really well under the circumstances. And I know that it's stressful. And that's what we're talking about, stress and strain that we have to deal with. And it comes in all forms, all shapes, you know. And some of us, you know, it's more difficult than others, but we all have it. Let me go to you, Brandon, for a minute, and I'm going to have to interrupt you because I know we'll have to go out, but then I will get back to it.
Okay. Well, I don't know. Where should I start? I guess main problem, my mom, she's been on drugs before I was even born. So she was probably, you know, taking drugs during, you know, her pregnancy with me and my sister. We're like 11 months apart. But pretty much it was growing up, you would see her and then you don't. And if you
You shared that same kind of thing that Monique is talking about.
Yeah, there was a
where
lot
the
of
father's
points.
In and out of the home.
Right.
In fact, let me stop you right there. You're tuned in to 411 Teen. We're going to take a brief break, but we'll get back and we'll start with you, Brandon. If you're just tuning in, the program is 411 Teen, and we are talking about just dysfunction in the family. I had to interrupt you, Brandon, and I want to let you continue.
Okay. Well, like I was saying, you know, my mom, growing up, my mom was in and out the house, and you ask my parents, you know, my brother, you know, where is my mom? And they'd be like, oh, she's on vacation, you know, exactly. Oh, she's in the hospital, she's sick, whatever. And this would be going, I would like be gone for like 2 weeks or months or whatever. And when she is there, she usually just passed out on the couch, whatever. So mostly me, my sister, and my brother, we had to raise ourselves because on the other hand, my dad, at the time, he used to work at Ford. And he used to, I think he worked like a double shift. Mm-hmm. So, you know, he's barely there in and out, whatever. I'm honestly surprised that I got through that, you know, without, you know, you know. So, you know, it's very hard. And then there's always those situations that she would bring because, you know, being an addict, and we're not that, you know, fortunate with money. You know, she had to find money, you know, and she would ask my dad. And sometimes he's like, no, whatever. And that would cause altercations. You know, I've been, there was one time where she had asked him right where she was, I don't know where he was dropping her off. But she asked for $20. And he was like, no, I'm not going to do that. And she actually tackled him out of the car. And, you know, there was fighting on the streets. You know, me and my sister just sitting in the back of the car. And we don't get no explanation about that. You know, we just have to live with
just
that.
Just wonder what's going
right, exactly.
on.
Right, exactly. You know, and then another time, once again, she asked for money. He said no. And, you know, when I walked in on it, he was on top of her with a knife. So I'm thinking, you know, what's going on with that? But it didn't take like 7 years later until it explained to me that she tried to attack him with the knife, whatever. So, you know, there's a bunch of stuff that we just have to make explanations for ourselves. And sometimes it's right and sometimes it's wrong. So, you know, it's really hard, you know, going through all that. And then,
What I hear is particularly you and Monique sharing is that you had to be independent
right.
at a very, very young age. And so it sounds like your childhood was really impacted. I mean, am I hearing you correctly?
Yes, yes, definitely, definitely.
Okay. And we'll come back to that. Fantasia.
Okay. I'm over here, like, you know, trying to get it together, listening to y'all's story. as far as, you know, the violence and things like that, it impacts the family, because then they get to a point where, you know, they want to retaliate and, you know, they want to get back at the person that did it. And then that causes, you know, so much strife and just, you know, stress on everybody, because you don't know, like, if my brother, he may do something. And I look up to my brother because my dad, he went to prison when I was about 6 or 7, and he was there for 10 years.
What was he in prison for, if you don't understand?
He was there for drug trafficking.
Okay.
So he was there for a long time, and because I'm originally from Alabama, so I couldn't, once we moved to Alabama and my dad went to jail, it was hard for me to get back and forth. And, you know, I needed my brother. I needed some type of father figure in my life. So my brother's 9 years older than me. So he was able to, you know, be that father figure if I needed it. But if he was always in trouble and things like that, I didn't know, you know, who to look for. Mm-hmm. And he was only 18 the first time he went to prison. So, well, he went to jail. And it hurt me because I'm just a young girl. I don't know. I don't understand. Like, what is he doing? Like, why are all these police around? You know, this is the one guy, you know, in my life that I'm looking up to. So it just, the violence and, you know, crime and things like that trickle. And it just, it hurts me because I don't know if his son, you know, is going to be like that, or, you know, when he grows up and things like that. So it's scary in a sense. And, you know, just losing people over and over and over again, it just gets to a point where you don't know, like, who is next. Like, and it always seems like it's just my family. Like, you know, and I know that's not the truth, but mentally you just look at it like, why? Like, why? You know, I just lost my aunt, you know, at the beginning of March. And then on Sunday, you know, another person gets killed. And it's just like, you know, and my brother was holding him while he was dying, like, he was watching him take his last breath. So I'm like, you know, my brother, he calling me, he's crying, I'm all the way here, so it's not much I can do. Like, I'm just listening to him cry, and I have to stay strong for him because I know it's hard.
And then you've had another brother that,
right, that was killed. Yeah, and he was only 16. So, you know, looking at that, it's just like, you know, you know, I'm talking about two different brothers, that's why it's maybe confusing. Mm-hmm. But yeah, so looking at him and in his situation, it was different because he was literally at the wrong place at the wrong time. It wasn't like nobody was out to get him or anything like that, but just for the simple fact that somebody killed him, you know, that was a robbery going bad. So, you know, it's just different things. It's just scary. It really is.
Now, LaRica, you were nodding your head as Fantasia was talking. What was it that touched you and you could identify with?
That you feel like it's your family, like the trends that happen. It's like, you know, who's next? Like, because like mostly everybody in my family has had some kind of abuse, be it as drug abuse or alcohol abuse or even the simple abuse of like holding on to somebody. Like, my grandmother has a problem with, she holds on to men. Mm-hmm. Like, she, like, no matter what they do or, and my grandmother actually, when she was little, when my mom was little, my mom and my aunt were, you know, closer in age, and she would actually beat them. And me being little, I wouldn't understand. Mm-hmm. I just know that every day after school, you hear something in the living room, and then my aunt would come in the room and would turn the music up really loud and, you know, dance and sing. So I'm not thinking anything of it. And then when me and my mom actually, because my mom had me when she was 16.
Okay.
And when me and my mom actually did move out, my aunt moved in with us. And when I was overhearing the story, it was my grandma's boyfriend, like, pinned her up against the door by her neck. And she's just like, he's trying to choke her. And my grandmother's yelling, "What did you do to my aunt?" And I'm just like, well, how is that, you know, how does that work? Like, what
exactly?
What do you mean? It's like, it's some kind of, I find that to be addiction. Mm-hmm. Like, you're addicted to the caring of a man. And it's like, I feel like all the things that my family goes through can be trending. Like, I can easily pick up a bottle and just drink and drink and drink or pick up a crack pipe and just, you know, I feel like those kind of things could...
That's a part of your environment.
Yeah, like I could, like it could be hereditary. And it's like, I feel like, I know it's not just my family, but I feel like we just have like an overload of just, of dysfunction. Like it's just an overload. It's unbearable to think like, you know, what kind of person you're going to be. Like my mom, because of the way my grandmother treated my mom and me don't have the best relationship. Like, me and my mom's relationship grew after I left the house. Like, we couldn't, I couldn't talk to my mom. Like, my mom didn't know I had my first period. Like, I didn't know what to, you know, what to tell her. And it was like, whoopings were something really big. And it's like, because my grandmother used to do it to her. She did it to me. And I'm thinking like, okay, I'm not going to be like that. But it's like, when you say, you know, it's like when you look at your parents, if you ever want to know what you're going to be like in 40 years, look at your mom. It's like, I don't want to be like, I don't want to be like that. And then my aunt, like we're all, I call us like, we're all different stages of crazy. Like my grandmother is the emotional crazy. Like she can cry and drop a dime, like just cry and then go back to regular speaking. Like my aunt is the angry crazy. Like if she's paying your light bill and she gets mad at you, she's going to cut the lights off so you can sit there and think about what you did. And my mom is like the workaholic crazy. So she's stressed out. Like, she worked two jobs. So she's stressed out at work. And then she just comes home and just yells. Just yells and yells and hits. And she just, you know, it's just like... And then me, I'm more like a... Like, I have an attitude. Like, I have a bad... It's like a click. Like, it just... You know, I don't want that to affect, you know, like... Because I can easily just say, okay, well, I'm just going to get drunk. And just, you know, I'm depressed right now, or I'm sad, or I have an attitude, so I'm just going to go in this corner. And you know, that's like, they're like coping mechanisms for my family. Like, for my uncle, in order for him to feel better about himself, because everybody thinks he's the problem child, he drinks. My grandmother, she seeks attention, so, you know, she does crack or whatever, you know, whatever she, you know, whatever. So it's like, I feel like it's just a bad trend that I don't want. I'm trying to figure out how to break it. Yeah, I don't really want to continue, you know. And then, like, my mom had me when I was 16. When she was 16, my grandmother had me, my mom when she was 15. And I luckily broke that because now I'm 19, about to be 20. But my mom really treated me different because she thought that I was going to be like that. So she was like, you know, I had a street life curfew till I was 18, or I couldn't go anywhere, or I couldn't have male friends. And she would just treat me as if I was a hoe, basically. Like, you know, she would actually call me like a hoe. And it's just like, I don't understand, but my grandmother called her that.
So it's a pattern.
It's just
generational curses.
Like, and I was, when she was saying, like, you know, it feels like it just continues. Like, you know, what is her nephew going to be like when he grows up? It's like, oh, what am I going to be like when I grow up? It's crazy. Yeah.
As all of you, and I think about what you've had to endure and are still enduring, especially when you go home, you know, for breaks and whatever, how do you think it has affected you, the way you are today?
I personally think with me, like, here lately, when my brother was killed last year, I experienced my first deep depression to the point of being suicidal. And I didn't know, it wasn't my first time losing someone, but it was my first time losing somebody so close to me. A person that you see every day, you talk to every day, you know what I mean? Like, just too much to bear. And I couldn't take it. I was lost, and I didn't understand why. Like, you know, I didn't understand. It was like all those deaths just came in one and just set it off for me. And I was able to break that by coming here. And people ask me all the time, why'd you come to FAMU, you know? And it was to be able to get over that, you know, not really get over it, but help myself. It kind of a therapy type of thing to leave, you know, Kentucky because it was so much going on. And then now, today,
like... What happens when you go back?
It's hard. Mm-hmm. And I'm ready to come back here. You know, but it doesn't take it away is the thing about it. But I try to do things, you know, stay positive and stuff like that. But the only thing is, like, because I was in such a deep depression... When things happen, I lose somebody else. I see myself going back. Like, when I lost this person on Sunday, here lately, I've been so sad. Like, I can't be happy. Like, I feel myself going back, and I hate it. It hurts a lot. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
What? It's actually made me a stronger person. I feel like I strive to not... My goal at 16 was to not be pregnant at 16. Mm-hmm. Like, and... My goal when I was peer pressured to, you know, do something that I didn't want to do, like drugs or something, I can easily say, you know, hey, and I think back, okay, let me see how my grandmother acts when she starts drinking. Okay, yeah, no, I can't. I think it has made me a stronger person. It makes me think more complex. Like, I think stuff through all, like, long-term effects. Like, okay, what's going to happen if I continue to do this in 5 years? Mm-hmm. I think that's basically what it, you know, maybe, yeah.
Okay.
Maybe a stronger person.
I agree with Lakira, Larika.
Okay.
My bad. Because, like, it makes me a stronger person in the way that you don't want to prove your parents, right, isn't what they say you're going to be. You want to prove them wrong. And throughout it all, you got to be strong. Everybody had their own stories, but what's the significance matter is, like, how you deal with it and how you overcome it. And today, I feel like I'm more open. I feel like I could stand and talk for a bit without breaking down and so forth. So I'm doing... pretty much everything on my own. I'm moving in my apartment next 2 weeks. So, like, I feel very independent at age 18 and just be mature enough.
Okay. You tuned in to 411 Teen. We're going to take a break, but we'll return momentarily. Welcome to the Ephesus Corner. Panelists weigh in on the rights and wrongs of daily life. The Ephesus question for today is, your best friend is dating a classmate of yours who you know has serious behavioral problems. What do you do? Should you tell them about this person's history or just not say anything? I mean, you've gone to school with them for a long time. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, they have serious problems.
I don't want to be like, depends how cool you are with the person.
But,
you know, if it's like one of my best friends, I'm like, yo, she got, you know, you would tell them.
Right.
So, because you got to hang around them. That means you got to hang around her, too.
Right.
But, and I'll be looking out for them with myself. So I would tell them, definitely.
Okay. Yeah.
Okay. You wouldn't be worried about the backfire from it.
Well, if she snaps, well, that's proof that I was kind of right.
But you know that sometimes the friend could get mad too.
Yeah,
that's what I'm saying. Yeah. So they could be backfire two ways.
Because I see me, I would just take a chance, honestly. Because I just try to look at myself in the shoes. I want you to tell me because I would rather, you know, we can both be with each other when he snaps or something like that than him just to snap on you or, you know, while you by yourself if he has really bad problems.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because it can get bad, you know. And if you know about it, then something happens to your friend and you feel bad. I would rather just take the chance in her getting at me or him getting mad at me. And, you know, well, you know, if you don't listen to me, at least you know that I told you. And I won't be that friend that just didn't tell you and I knew about him or her.
Okay, that's a good position.
I have the friends where you can't tell them, you can't tell nobody about their man. Like, you cannot. But I'm an outspoken person. So when it comes to my mind, most likely it come out of my mm-hmm. mouth. There's no really filter. So mm-hmm. it's like, I would say it, but I would say it in a way to where it makes it feel like I'm not really like, okay, let's sit down and have this serious conversation. Okay, girl, like, uh-huh. he's crazy. You know, I would make it, you know, like, make it, you know, to where I'm telling you, but I'm not really directly telling you. So, like, it's just like I'm kind of hinting around. Like, maybe I saw something that maybe you should, you know, look into so you can look into yourself. So I'm not just telling, you know, I'm not telling you. Maybe it can be something that you just like, I maybe need to look mm-hmm. at that next time, you know. Mm-hmm. Yeah, because I'm that kind of person. Like, you can't tell me. Like, I'm going to do it. I'm going to do it regardless because it's ultimately my decision. But.
Okay. What about you?
I'll tell her because okay. even though people might feel like you don't want to see them together or whatever, you don't wish their relationship mm-hmm. well, but I'll tell her because it's better to know than to be living in the dark, because I want somebody to tell me, let me choose if I want to still be with him regardless of his situation. So I'll tell her.
Okay. Yeah, you all would not be. The one thing I was worried about, misinterpretation. I mean, and that's open, that you would, all of you are saying to me that you would tell.
Right.
Honestly, mm-hmm. like you were saying, Larika, you know, they're going to do what they're going to do, but I would feel that they would respect that, you know, you would give them a heads up anyways.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Mm-hmm.
Right. So, like, you know, I did, you know.
Well, put yourself in that situation.
Right.
What if your a friend of yours told you that the person you were dating was not cool, you know? Would you rather they told you or not mm-hmm. say anything at all?
I would be glad that they told me, but I would still, like, I wouldn't badger my friend about it, you know? Because mm-hmm. I get to the point, you know, I want you to tell me, but if I haven't seen it, I want to see it for myself.
Exactly. That's
so
how I am.
I want to see it, and then, you know, I would, you know, thank you for telling me, but I do want to see it. You know, I want to see it because I don't want to just leave him, you know, and he ain't really done nothing just because you said
it. Or it could have been what he was
going through.
Yeah, what he was going through or the kind of people that he was around at the time mm-hmm. that made mm-hmm. him think like that. Mm-hmm. Like, because I had a friend that, like, we were talking, and my friend's just like, oh, you need to stay away from him. And I'm like, when I talk to him, it's completely different. So you mm-hmm. can't really tell me, like, how we react to, you know, like, the way we react isn't the way you see him react, you know?
All right. Well, I thank you. We are out of time. that's it for today's Ethicist Corner. You're tuned in to 411 Teen, a weekly program for teens and other interested folks. This hour, we're examining dysfunctional families. I'm Dr. Liz Hollifield, and joining me at the roundtable, I welcome again Fantasia Jackson, Monique McFarlane, LaRika Moultrie, and Brandon Jeriff. Brandon, we were just talking about how the dysfunction has impacted, you know, each one of us, and how it's affected you for today, and you didn't get to respond to that.
Mm-hmm. It's a blueprint. You see, like, our families are like a blueprint on what's not working, you know, dysfunction. So, so, like, we see that. It's like, all right, not going to do that because you see how it affects us. You know, you don't. Right. I don't want that for my kids, mm-hmm. whatever. So it kind of drives me to do better. And because also, you know, when you succeed, and you say, they went through that and they're succeeding, you know, it kind of feels better, you know, because no one wants to hear, like, oh, you know, you're going through all that and, you know, you're not actually overcoming it. It's a, you know, a greater triumph mm-hmm. to do so. So I feel like I'm a better person.
So it's right. kind of a motivator for
right,
what I
motivator.
Hear you say.
Exactly.
Motivator to be successful and not to fall into those ruts.
It's like, don't let your struggle be your identity.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I can't remember which one of you it was, but one of you mentioned anger and resentment. And I wanted to look at that a little bit. Did any of you experience, you know, anger and resentment toward the family member that was causing all the chaos and causing the discord? And if so, how did you deal with that?
I know personally, I didn't really have anger or resentment because I was still trying to understand it. But my sister, she does not, you know, she has a really terrible relationship with my mother because she blames my mother for everything that's happened in her life, you know. And, you know, I'm trying to understand it, you know, as in the sense of why. And so I can communicate to my mother on that sense so that we can have a better relationship now, you know. But my sister, you know, every time they're in a room together, it'd be nice for like a good 5 minutes. And then there'll be an argument over why are you making chicken. I don't know. You know,
whatever.
Exactly. You know, so it'll be just any. And then they'll, you know, pull us into it. And my our opinions is like, you know, this is a stupid argument. Why are y'all, you know, arguing over something like this? But it's just they cannot. Take there's that under that stuff under that they haven't
Goes
forgiven each other
that.
Right
before mm-hmm.
so
mm-hmm.
yeah.
As you think about what you have been through and where you are going, and there are a number of people who are walking in the same shoes that you know have walked. Can you give them insight or suggestions as to how to cope? Because even though you all may have your own pain, you have been able to overcome that. You all are doing very well, and, you know, I commend you. But what kinds of things would you say, I guess what kind of suggestions would you offer to that individual who may be experiencing similar discord, who may be going through a number of changes in their family? And I'm looking at you, Monique. You want to start? Okay.
Sure. There's a saying that goes that it might be long, but it won't be forever. So just have that as a motivation and say you got to get out as soon as possible and always think positively and motivate yourself to strive for better because you are your greatest fear. So motivate yourself.
How did you motivate yourself? I mean, what did you do, given all that you had to experience, all that you went through? I mean, you're talking about physical abuse, verbal abuse, you know.
I was a very close person, so I always have a journal that I wrote down daily activities. Like
okay, so that's a good suggestion. Okay,
so you could write down like. Things, have a journal, personal things you talk about. Let that be your best friend. You talk about everything you want in it. And sometimes you read over and see what days you have improved or what you could have dealt with better or support.
Okay. All right. Appreciate your suggestion. Whomever.
I agree with Monique. I like poetry, so if it's something that I'm going through, I will write a poem down. And if it's something really sad or something that depresses me, I'll read it, and I'll read it like 3 times, and I'll burn it, and I'll watch it just burn. Okay. So it's like, it's off my chest, like, 'cause I've never really had anybody to, I'm the only girl of 9 brothers, but I'm only close with one of my brothers, and 2 of them are from my mom, and the others are from my dad. Mm-hmm. So I never really had anybody to talk to like that. So it's like I talk to myself. Mm-hmm. So I would write it down, and I would just read it. And, you know, I have my little cry and breakdown or whatever, because it's okay to cry. And then I burn it. So it's like it's off my chest. It's in the air. It's wherever it's at. You know, I found that to help just. Like, you know, you can read it over and over again, but then sometimes, you know, reading it over and over again just makes you relive, you know. So you let it go. But, yeah, that's something that really helped me writing poems.
Personally, she said a saying. I also heard it. It was actually a saying of the person that we lost on Sunday. He always used to say, it gets greater later. And, you know, it kind of motivates me. I'm a very spiritual person. So I'm always trying to be faithful. Like, you know, it's going to get better. Like, because really somebody's situation, you know, I'm sitting here talking about dysfunctional families, but I had a mother, you know, my father was in jail, but he never put his hands on me. And I'm thankful for that. And I can look at them and I can put, you know, put my hands up for them because, you know, they was able to go through things like that. So it's always better to look at somebody else's situation to motivate your own, because somebody has it worse than you. Regardless of what you're going through, there's somebody who don't have a home to live in, who don't, you know, it's all, that's my biggest motivation, is to look at somebody else's situation. Cause I can sit here and complain about losing people, but it's some people, you know, you look at Jennifer Hudson, she don't have, she lost her whole family in one, you know, and I've lost a lot of people, but I still have my mother. She don't have that. You know what I'm saying? So it's, I say keep the faith, you know, stay prayed up and to always know that it could be worse.
Okay. Yeah, I like your, and I'm a poet myself, so I'm with FAMU Voices Poetry Group. So I also, so you know, when I get like really, really emotional, I like to write poetry, you know, and just write it out. I don't burn it, but you know, that's just something I, you know, I do. But I like to stay positive also. I'm always laughing and joking, as y'all can see. To stay lighthearted, because I don't like to be, like, once again, in that too heavy sense. And at the end of the day, I feel like if you don't want that for yourself, you need to change it. You know, you need to find something and, you know, and do better for yourself, so you don't have to keep dwell in that, you know, your problems.
What role, and I know you touched on this, Fantasia, and I know being religious and being spiritual is not the same thing, but what role does religion or spirituality play in your day-to-day coping and handling and functioning of this dysfunction?
Me personally, okay. I just, you know, like you said, being, you know, religious and spiritual is different, but you know, spiritually I try to just keep my mind clear, you know, at all times. Religiously, which I am more religious than I am spiritual, so I just try to pray is all it is for me, you know, just pray and have faith. Okay. You know, that's pretty much it. Just prayers is what it is for me.
I think that's pretty much it. You feel like that's the only thing that you can do at the end of the day. You just pray for a better day, and you pray that they understand. Well, I actually pray that my family will understand what their action does to our family. That the fact that we couldn't get together unless somebody died. Like, I don't know my cousins, or they come around and it's like, I haven't seen you in 6 years, and we're not exaggerating. Like, I haven't seen you in 6 years. It's like, I pray for their understanding of, you know, what's actually, that they can see what everybody else sees. Because I feel like at times they don't see what they're, you know, what their actions are doing, or what their, my mother doesn't see what her words does, or my aunt doesn't see what her attitude does. I just, you can see what I mean. That's
pretty much it. Pretty much just pray and have faith. And then sometimes you might pray and it seems like God's not listening to your prayer, but just have faith. Like I said, it might be long, but it won't be forever.
Okay. What was the question?
Well, just kind of looking at, you know, your functioning and how things are going, and what how that family has, how it's all impacted you. I mean, that's basically what we're talking about.
How it's all impacted me.
You know, what would you, what has helped you to
make it? Yeah, how you getting through
it? How you getting through it?
Oh, I guess moving forward.
Did religion play a role at all?
Yes, because my dad, he was Catholic, so he makes sure that we go to church every Sunday. So, you know, I always would, you know, pray and, you know, ask and hope, you know, for an answer or whatever. And, yeah.
Okay. Yeah. What, if you had the opportunity to talk to that or say something to that specific family member that has caused so much stress and pain, what kinds of things would you say to him or her?
Well, I've tried, but, you know, it seems like when you do that, they feel like you're getting on them, so they want to get defensive about it, you know. So, but I guess patience. you gotta have patience with them, you know, and try to, you know, their pros and their goods and their bads, and you just have to be able to work around it so that you can function with them. But talking to them?
Like Brandon said, I've tried to, but he seems like he knows it all. So, mm-hmm. And he looks down like, you're the kid. You're not supposed to tell me what to do or how to talk to you. Because at the end of the day, I'm the dad. I know everything. So just praying for their understanding.
Okay.
Like with my grandmother, she... It kills me. Like, when I went home this past Saturday, we were in the car.
You got 2 minutes.
Okay, we were in the car, and she was supposed to get a phone card for $10. My cousin had given her $10. And she's like, take me to the store so I can get cigarettes, and then I'll just get a $5 card. And I'm like, Grandma, why don't you just get a $10? I think you're, you know, I think the phone card is more important than the, you know, the mm-hmm. cigarettes. I can't get crack for $10. And we all just turned around and looked at her like, what are you talking about? Nobody knows what she's talking. So she got really defensive. So it's like, I just wanted to look at her like, nobody's attacking you. Like, nobody was mm-hmm. questioning your motives. Mm-hmm. Nobody was, you know.
So it sounds like you would say to her, hey, chill.
Hey, chill. Like, you know, it is like, my mom's really just asking her. She's like, okay, well, what gas station you want to stop? My mom's not even. And I'm like, Grandma, just, you know, get the phone car. Like, you need to. And she just goes off, and I'm like, calm down. Like, nobody. Mm-hmm. Nobody cares what you can do with $10. You know, it's just like, I just want you to just...
chill.
Yes, mm-hmm. chill, because you're ruining it. Because we were just having a good time. We're all laughing in the car, and then it just goes, boom. It's over. Mm-hmm. The fun is over.
I just say, you know, my stuff is a little bit different, but I kind of just tell my cousins and, you know, my brother and them that I love them, and to see, you know, just as a bigger picture, and that... it's not getting better. You know, mm-hmm. we just keep losing people. So what you're doing is not working. Mm-hmm. So that's pretty much it.
Well, I just want to say thanks, I mean, for you all just sharing. Because I know it's a difficult and painful situation. But, you know, being able to share it may help somebody else who's listening. To my listening audience, tune in next week, same time, same place, to get the 411 on 411 Team. This edition of 411 Teen was produced by Dr. Liz Hollyfield. Technical engineer, Evan Rossi. Audio copies are available, and if you would like to participate in 411 Teen or have topic suggestions, call 1-800-829-8809, extension 358. That's 1-800-829-8809. Extension 358. If you would like to subscribe to 411 Teen Podcast, log in wfsu.org.